Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. We're talking today about how advances in biology, computing, materials are all coming together to create some revolutionary advances in healthcare. And I'm joined now by John Littlechild, a general partner at Healthcare Ventures, a life science venture capital firm. He has invested in many biotech companies over the last three decades, including Genzyme, where he was one of the first two investors. John Littlechild, thanks for being here.
I'm delighted. Thank you for asking me.
So I'm going to start with a bit of a broad question, but how do you decide what to invest in, and what are some of the most exciting things that you see out there right now?
Well, how you decide that you like a particular investment starts in, there's many different ways you can approach that question. You might start by looking at the second part of your question, which is what do you think are the exciting areas of science? And there's no question some of the best returns we've ever made have been in areas where we sat back and looked at a revolution that was going on in the technology that we thought could lead to a change in the practice of medicine. So many years ago, we started a company called Human Genome Sciences, which was one of the companies that was involved in sequencing the human genome. Then sometimes you're just quite pragmatic about it, and you look and you're networked into a lot of people. You talk to the people in academic medicine, and you find that there are some interesting breakthroughs going on in a particular area, and you follow that area down.
Where are the revolutions right now, do you think?
Well, you know, revolutions are awfully easy to see in hindsight. They're a lot more challenging to see when they're in front of you. So let's talk about, I think there's a lot of incredibly important incremental developments that are going on in a number of areas. So I think you've got to ask yourself the question of where are the major medical diseases today that really are unmet? There's no really good solutions for those diseases. And where is the technology up to that could lead to solutions in those? One area I've been very excited about for quite some time, and it's actually quite a long time now, is the whole area of stem cell research. Many diseases result in, are the result of a cellular deficit. Somehow the body or the environment has destroyed a population of cells. And you can treat that patient in many ways, but you will never help the patient in a way that is curative until you can figure out how to replenish that cellular population. And stem cells offers the opportunity to do that. And when you're dealing with cellular differentiation and stem cells and the role they play, you're dealing with very complicated areas of biology that we're really just at the leading edge of starting to understand now.
And is it America that's doing the sort of leading edge work with stem cells? Because certainly we've been back and forth over a couple of presidential administrations with whether it was okay to publicly fund stem cell research. And I actually have a friend who does stuff out at UCLA, and they would have two of everything, you know, two refrigerators, one for the stem cell work that had been privately funded, and another refrigerator for samples that were publicly funded. Has that hampered our ability in America?
Oh, I'm sure it has. But the power of the academic medical community and the academic medical research community in the United States is just so much stronger than it is in any other country. I am not concerned that the key breakthroughs and innovations are much more than likely to occur in this country. I think you highlight with that question the difficulty of politicians and governments getting involved in technology and research, which largely they don't understand. Now, I fully accept that the essence of the stem cell debate related to fetal stem cells which is an ethical area, which I'm going to stay completely away from. But I think technology has rolled well past that, and the ability to grow stem cells from non-fetal matter has emerged, and the field is going to go forward. How long it's going to take, I can't tell you.
So stem cells are interesting to you. Tell me, what else do you think? I mean, I know that, and this goes a little bit beyond biotech into pharmaceutical, but I think, you know, I've heard people express the view that it's frustrating that there's another pill to help you sleep, right, or another erectile dysfunction pill, and it feels like the big things, the Alzheimer's, the cancer, there isn't any, you know, big breakthroughs on those.
Biology is very, very complicated. Diseases like cellular deficit diseases, like Alzheimer's disease, are very, very complicated, particularly as it relates to the central nervous system. So where are the areas where we really need new drugs? You're right. I mean, if you look at, you know, what is driving our healthcare costs, if you take that approach for a moment, we've got two huge megatrends that are going on, which are going to overlay on top of each other and push our healthcare costs in this country to levels that are higher than we've seen before. And one is just the demographics of the aging population. And the second is the obesity crisis that we have, which is spawning all kinds of diseases, of which type 2 diabetes is just, you know, just one major one that we see. That's pushing up healthcare costs.
Do you see a lot of people working on obesity-related drugs, devices? And this could pertain to diabetes or anything else. Is that a major area now for research?
I've seen a lot of obesity drugs fail in development. And there, we clearly today, the whole understanding of the metabolic rate, you know, of the person, that there are so many complicated pieces to the causes of obesity that start in childhood and run through adolescence, that I don't think you're ever going to find that you can come up with a magic pill that's going to solve that. It's too complicated an issue. I do believe, though, that as medical science goes forward and we understand, we gain a greater understanding in this area, that there will be important new drugs in this area. I just don't really see any on the horizon right now.
Talk a little bit about Boston and its sort of role in the biotech space and whether you see us as a particular hub in the biotech pharma world.
Well, I'm sure the city of Cambridge would take issue with you.
Yeah, the Boston area, we shall say.
Absolutely. No, if you look back, when I first got involved in investing in biotech companies, there were two or three significant companies in the Cambridge area, and we had major academic medical centers. And we had venture capitalists. So we had all the key ingredients all in one place. We had a very educated workforce. We had money locally. And we had the academic scientists who were the founders of many of these companies. And that particular mix caused, you know, the spark that grew that we've talked about into the whole of the biotech industry that emerged really through the 80s. The decade of the 80s was all about the emergence of the biotech industry. The decade of the 90s was all about, I think, the translation of that approach to therapeutic development rippling through the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry transformed itself from being a principally chemical-based industry, you know, in the 70s and 80s, to being, you know, Merck and GSK are biotech companies today, just in the same way that Genzyme is, or rather Sanofi Aventis. Because if you look back to the start of the biotech revolution, the physicians really had a very limited number of drugs available. Today, we've been enormously successful. There's a massive increase in the number of drugs that are available and the diseases that we can treat with those drugs. But I think that the creation, you couldn't set out today to create a biotech cluster or a biotech hub, you know, anywhere else in the country, because it's been done.
Is there any other city in the country that could give the Boston area a run for its money in terms of biotech?
Oh, absolutely. I think San Diego and San Francisco, and areas in San Francisco. Yes. But they don't have quite the same mix. They don't have Harvard and MIT, you know, and the Kendall Square environment.
Talk a little bit about what the economy is doing to biopharma. Is it slowing down the drugs that are in the... Obviously, we've been through a pretty tough few years. Or is this an area that has really kind of escaped unscathed from a tough economy?
Illness is not, you know, economy related. The need for new drugs is not related to, you know, what happens on Wall Street. Though what happens on Wall Street does impact the availability of capital. The amount of government spending on the National Institutes of Health does have an impact long way down the track on how medical science moves forward. And so I think the short-term perturbations in the market of, you know, whether the unemployment rate is 5% or 8% doesn't have any real effect on this industry. But there are things out there that have major effects, you know, on the industry. Is there an IPO market available for small biotech companies? Is there capital available to allow them to grow? And is the level of government funding into medical research, what's going to happen to that over the next few years?
How is the level of government funding right now for research?
I would say it's at, if you look in a historical context, it's very high. The question is it going to remain at those levels, or is it going to start to turn down? Can the government afford to continue to borrow money from China and put it into medical research? Are we covering, you know, the national balance of payments?
You get to hear about new drugs, new devices all the time, sort of before the general public gets to hear about them. If you look for us 5, 10, 15 years down the road, what kinds of things do you think might be a part of healthcare, drugs, devices that we don't have now but that could really improve our lives? Are there 2-3 things that you think are really interesting?
In the short term, I think there's an extraordinarily interesting development going on in the treatment of type 1 diabetes, and it's known generally as the artificial pancreas.
And that's juvenile diabetes.
Juvenile diabetes, early onset diabetes, which has been increasing, and nobody really understands properly the onset of that disease. So, coming back to your earlier conversation, somebody has a genetic predisposition. And then there's some sort of environmental trigger. We just don't understand exactly what that combination is. But these are people who will spend their life having to take insulin. And, of course, historically, this was done with multiple daily injections. And then pump technology came along, and these were big externally worn pumps. And then smaller pump technology has come along. But all the time, the patients were pricking their fingers to check the blood glucose level. But now we've got continuous blood glucose monitors, which today are through the skin. So they're only worn for a short period of time, but they continuously measure over, say, a 3-4 day period, blood glucose. Now, if you can, in real time, measure blood glucose and you can connect that with the correct algorithm to a pump that's administering the insulin, all of a sudden that patient can put on a device, an artificial pancreas, which is measuring blood glucose and administering insulin correctly, that lets them live in a completely unfettered, normal way. And that the pieces of that technology I can see coming together over the next few years in a very exciting way. We've already spent some time talking about an area that I believe has a great future. It's just I don't know when it's going to start.
And that is,
it's cellular therapy. I'm not sure whether we will be ever administering cells to people. I think much more we will understand how to manipulate a person's own, endogenous stem cells to cause them to start up. So that allows you to start treating a huge range of diseases that we can't touch today. And of course, the other area that you'd like to believe that we're going to be able to address are many of these small, orphan, and genetically based diseases. Genzyme did an unbelievably good job dealing with Gaucher's disease. So what about retinitis pigmentosa, which causes blindness?
These are rare diseases. Fairly few people have, right?
That a limited number of people have, but they have a genetic basis. If you have the gene, you will get the disease. And how do you treat those diseases? So I think the biopharmaceutical industry is going to turn its attention. It's always going to look for blockbusters. Can we solve obesity with a pill? But I think more than that, people will understand that the unmet medical needs lie in many of these small diseases for which there really is no good pharmaceutical therapy today. And more attention is being turned to that. And I think we're going to see some extraordinary results.
John Littlechild, General Partner at Healthcare Ventures, thanks so much for coming in.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us this hour. Remember that you can listen to the show online at wgbh.org/innovationhub, where you can also download our iTunes podcasts. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.